When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Ringside Chaos, the greatest pro wrestling podcast in the world today, the pro wrestling discussion segment of the Bear of Texas podcast and Pain Train Pipe Bomb Productions. Ladies and gentlemen, it is such a blessing, and I do mean such a blessing, to basically dedicate this episode to the unique and illustrious career of the man they call Sting. After 40 years in the wrestling business, Sting officially retired. And this time, it appears that he has retired for good. Seeing what I saw from that AEW Revolution at the end, I was crying. Quite frankly, I started tearing up when Sting made his entrance, with his two sons cosplaying his previous characters. Of course, the Wolfpack Sting, and of course, the original Surfer Sting. We went through quite a phase of pure nostalgia, pure pro wrestling nostalgia. Every time on this show, how I've said that every pro wrestler is unique in their own way, as far as their career goes. There's never, and I mean never been, a career quite as unique and as illustrious than the one of the man they call Sting, the icon, the franchise, the vigilante. 40 years, he gave it his best, night in and night out, no matter which company he worked for. And I am forever grateful. I am forever grateful that even though I was not a WCW kid, even though I was never really much of a TNA guy, TNA wrestling guy, I'm glad that YouTube and all these other sources have provided me with the opportunity to watch Sting's matches and do my homework on the guy. Sting is one hell of a wrestler, always has been. The character, the charisma, the mic skills, my goodness, there is nothing, and I mean nothing, negative about Sting. And I'm already starting to get emotional. Now, I wrote an article about the man's career for Third Down Thursdays, which I strongly recommend that you subscribe to. Third Down Thursdays, a great sports website. Third Down Thursdays is what, in fact, saved my sports writing career. I'm forever grateful. Shout out to MJ. Shout out to Coach Bruce. God bless you guys. I love y'all. And I said to myself, well, look, talking about Sting's career would take a very long time, so I'm going to try to summarize to the best of my ability, but I cannot leave any valuable information. So I took that challenge. And this episode is also a challenge, but you know what? I'm going to take that challenge too. You know, a lot of wrestling fans in this generation do not know that Sting was not always this crow character. They are unaware that there was the Surfer Sting. They have no idea about that time. So that's why I tell them, look, do your research on the guy. You're going to be so fascinated that you're going to want to go back and watch the work he did way back then. When he first got started in 1987 with Jim Crockett Promotions, which then went on to become World Championship Wrestling. That feud with the Four Horsemen. That time he was teaming up with Lex Luger. The time when he first won the NWA World title. Those legendary matches with Ric Flair. I mean, his rivalry with Ric Flair is basically considered to be his greatest rivalry of all time. Now, some would say it was the feud with the New World Order. Some would say it was his feud in TNA with Kurt Angle. You know, whatever. Every wrestling fan has their own opinion about who Sting's best rivalry was. Now, the way I see it, obviously, because he's had so many, you know, whatever, with Ric Flair, someone would say that. But you know what? I always say it like this. I am just so glad that Sting has basically been embroiled in many great historic rivalries. Sting gave us so much. That's what I'm grateful for. That's the way I see it. I don't see it as, oh, this is the best rivalry. No, it's this one. No, it's that one. I just see it. The fact is, he's had so many great rivalries, it's very difficult to pick which one was the best because there's been so many good ones. You know? But, you know, and seeing, you know, everything, the fact is, you know, when I saw that episode on Dark Side of the Ring about the Ultimate Warrior, I had no idea that at the beginning of Sting's career, he was actually a tag team with the Ultimate Warrior. I had no idea. You see, you learn a lot. So, man, I believe at that point when they first got started, they were actually known as a team called Power Team USA, I believe. And then I think at one point when they went to another promotion, they were known as the Blade Runners. So, and the fact that Sting was dubbed the franchise of WCW, man, 15 championships he won with the promotion, man. And winning the world title for the first time in 1990, the rise to the main event status, man, he's been over with the fans since the beginning, man. Even before he reached main event status, because the character, the charisma, the talent, the wrestling ability, he had it all. He had it all. And he's had it all from the beginning to the end. That's why I say very proudly, the most unique and most illustrious career in the history of professional wrestling. The man they call Sting. You know, and when I saw the last match on the program of WCW Nitro, the final main event was Sting versus Ric Flair. Man. Now, I did say earlier that there was nothing negative about Sting. Well, there's a couple of things that made mistakes that were made as far as the booking goes, but that's not on Sting. Like, a lot of fans say that when Sting turned heel in 2001, that was right there a huge botch made by creative direction. But at the same time, some would say, well, then, Alex, isn't that a bad thing on Sting? Like, nope. Sting was just basically doing as he was told. So, not only that, I think the two things that stand out there is his heel turn in 2001 because he was still being cheered as a babyface. Number two is the infamous match with Jeff Hardy in 2011, which we will get to. But other than that, there are no negatives about Sting. So, well, you know what comes number three? His tenure in WWE. Yeah, Sting should have won at WrestleMania 31. He should have won. Man. Well, good. You see, that's the part that I really, you know, get extremely frustrated. So that's what the little selfish part of me that is a big fan of Sting kind of rolls in. So, although I think Sting actually said that he felt that Triple H should have been the one to go over. I mean, look, while I do believe Sting should have won, look, if Sting is pleased with the result of him losing to Triple H, then fine. That's what matters. But, you know, I just honestly believe that Sting should have won. But again, if Sting is happy with how the outcome went, then fine. But we all know for sure that the outcome of his career with WWE did not go well because a lot of fans are extremely angry about how he was treated. Now, his final match in WWE was actually that match against Seth Rollins, I believe, at the Night of Champions, but he suffered that neck injury, which ultimately led to him announcing his first retirement. And he announced his first retirement when he was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2016, which, of course, it was in Dallas, so, man, and, you know, and again, that was his first retirement, but, you know, I kind of skipped a little bit, you know, too far from the World Championship Wrestling, so, you know, before we had the Crossing, the Surfers thing, the blonde hair, the blonde flat top, you know, that face paint, you know, everything. I mean, oh, it was just, you know, such a magical character, you know, Bill from Venice Beach, California, man. Oh, you know, and I'll never forget the matches he had, you know, with the great Muta, the Japanese wrestler, man. Oh, man, that feud with the Four Horsemen he had, you know, in 1990 and 1991, it was just absolutely fantastic. And then the program of him, you know, that feud with Vader as well, I believe, you know, that was in 1992, 1993. You know, the time he was teaming up with Lex Luger, man. So now we're going to get to the time where he basically underwent the character change. And that started and that was around the time he was going to feud with the NWO. So I don't know exactly what happened, okay? So, because from what I understand, fans noticed that he was starting to grow long black hair. His, everything was changing. Now, some would say that it was probably a good time because while the Crow Sting character was great and everybody still loved it couldn't hurt that he was going to go through a character change. So all of a sudden, he's up in the rafters. He's, long black hair, the black and white face paint, the dark, black wrestling gear. Like, he's like a dark vigilante character with a baseball bat. I mean, man, the fact that he just basically was the causing the fear of the NWO. I mean, that particular time when he just destroyed the NWO. Man. Yeah, I think when the Outsiders and Kevin Nash and the late Scott Hall came, I mean, he was actually one of the first ones, to kind of, start a feud with them. So, of course, the infamous moment when Hulk Hogan turned on the WCW and formed the NWO, it was actually a match between the Outsiders versus Macho Man Randy Savage, Sting, and I believe it was also Lex Luger. So, man. And the moment that Hulk Hogan turned heel, oh man, oh man, oh man. That was the moment right there. And of course, it was at Bash at the Beach. It was 2 years after he actually made his debut for WCW when Hulk Hogan beat Ric Flair for the title in his first night, Bash at the Beach in 1994. Man. Oh boy. So that time, feuding with the NWO, it obviously builds up to the point where the 1997 Starrcade when Sting wrestled against Hulk Hogan, although the match itself, if you see how the match itself went, how, Hulk Hogan was kind of booked to make to look stronger. I mean, obviously, as people will say, well, that's the result of Hulk Hogan and doing his usual politics backstage. I mean, again, Sting won at the end, but the match itself should have gone a bit better. It should have been an absolute war. Sting should have gotten more offense. I mean, it should have been basically both guys fighting tooth and nail. Okay, and I don't mean to be the one that's complaining, but look, I'm just honestly I'm being honest, okay? But as we know, the way the match was supposed to go, Hulk Hogan was originally supposed to win because the referee was supposed to make a fast count, but the referee kind of messed up that spot. Now, it happens. Sometimes when you're nervous, you're stressed, you're under a lot of pressure, things will happen. So the plan was Hogan originally wins by pinfall because the referee makes a fast count. Now that referee Nick Patrick, if I remember correctly, during that time he was actually a referee that was actually loyal to the NWO. He often sided with them, so it would have made sense that he makes a fast count. Now, interestingly enough, this comes right after the infamous Montreal Screwjob. Bret Hart jumps ship to WCW, and the first thing they do with him is that they appoint him to be the enforcer. I mean, I think at first it's supposed to be the referee, because you remember, I'll never forget, I think James J. Dillon introduces him, like, let's bring the man who's going to referee this match. So Bret Hart was actually kind of appointed as the special guest enforcer. So he accuses of making the fast count, and then restarts the match, and then Sting wins by submission. But Sting ended up being stripped of the title 11 days later due to the controversy, and of course because of the botch. So they had to kind of, WCW Creative kind of had to basically, well, they had to right the wrong, but they kind of had to really kind of do something to kind of put it in the storyline to make sure Sting wins, in a better way. So Sting did actually go on to win the vacant title. So he would continue the rivalry with the NWO, then eventually the NWO split into two, and he became the NWO Wolfpack, and then started wearing the red face paint and everything. So that was great, and we'll never forget the finger poke of doom, which a lot of people say is what really honestly killed WCW. I mean, it was that night where the World Wrestling Federation Raw is War when Mankind won the title. And yep, Mankind did in fact put my butt in the seat, and he glued my eyeballs to the TV screen. It was at that point where WCW was just, basically just going down the toilet, and it was only getting worse and worse and worse. And during that time when Vince Russo left the WWF to work for WCW, just got worse, man. And this is no disrespect to Vince Russo, but I'm sorry. But so going around the time, he would have a feud with Jeff Jarrett as well, and of course, the time in Impact Wrestling, it was going like that. So, But when Sting turning heel, you know, it just didn't go well with WCW fans. I mean, they were still cheering him, for goodness sake. But I think at the same time, they just refused to accept his heel turn. Like, because Sting was so popular, such a well over babyface as the vigilante character, the crow Sting. WCW fans just were not going to take that for an answer. They did not want to see a heel Sting. So I think that they were still cheering him because they still loved him. But this was also, I feel like, a jab to WCW management for making such a horrible decision. So the final feuds go in place. I think he had that feud with Vampiro, I believe. I think I saw a little bit of that. So, man, and I think, you know, they actually had a Human Torch match, which was at the Great American Bash, which I believe was in the year 2000. So it was about, you know, around 24 years ago. So, you know. And you know, I think I'm not sure exactly when and how Sting turned face. I think, you know, he also had a feud with Lex Luger as well, but this time I think Lex Luger was a babyface. So, man, so after I'm not sure exactly again. I think when Sting actually turned heel, it was actually in a match against Hulk Hogan when Sting used the bat to win the title for the sixth time. So I'm not exactly sure how Sting became a face again, but you know, when the WWF, you know, did not, you know, purchase WCW and did not actually buy out Sting's contract with AOL Time Warner, I'm not sure, because I think Sting, you know, according to my research, Sting's WCW contract was originally set to expire in March of 2002, So I believe maybe he sat out the rest of the contract. I mean, I'm not sure exactly, you know, how it worked, but you know, a lot of people wonder why Sting didn't go to the WWE in 2001. But you know, and I've done the research, Bill. Number one, Sting confirmed that he did in fact have talks with Vince McMahon, and it said that Vince McMahon was good to him. But it's often believed that there was actually a segment, I think when Booker T made his debut for WWE in that segment with The Rock, it's said that how that segment went with how Booker T was treated in that segment, they said that's why Sting wanted nothing to do with WWE. So Sting would for a time work for a promotion known as World Wrestling All-Stars, where he toured around the world, worked matches in Ireland, in Scotland, I would imagine in England as well, in Switzerland, and I also believe he went to New Zealand as well. I mean, he traveled all around the world, and he would eventually sign with Impact Wrestling in 2003, which at the time was known as the NWA Total Nonstop Action. So, man. So I'm not, you know, I go through that. I mean, his first feud in TNA Wrestling was with Jeff Jarrett. I mean, I'm telling you, all the rivalries he had in TNA, and I'm not going to go through the whole a journey like that, like I did with WCW, although that might seem like a mistake, but, you know, all the best rivalries, I mean, the fact that, you know, they would say his feud with AJ Styles is considered one of the best, although he only had two one-on-one matches with AJ Styles. The first one was in 2008, when Sting beat AJ Styles to retain the TNA World title, and then a year later, in 2009, it was AJ Styles that retained the title against Sting, and both those matches were absolute thrillers. They were great. I've watched them. So even though he only had two one-on-ones with AJ Styles, the both matches were so good, the build-ups and everything, so it's considered to be a good rivalry. But also the rivalries with Kurt Angle, Samoa Joe, Bully Ray, and this, again, the other one with Jeff Jarrett, which you know, of course, you know, it was a continuation from the time from WCW. You know, some would say that, you know, that Sting's feud with Jeff Hardy is honestly, it's memorable for all the wrong reasons, as this source likes to say. So that particular moment, you know, of course, you know, Jeff Hardy came in the ring, you know, under the influence, and I forget which pay-per-view it was, but you know, and the match basically went like, I think about 88 seconds, Sting would hit the Scorpion Deathdrop and actually forcefully shoot style pin Jeff Hardy, prevent him from kicking out. And you know, as Sting was walking up to the ramp to go backstage, you know, I tried to listen in because some fans literally were chanting That was BS. That was BS. And Sting turns around and says, I agree. I agree. I mean, Sting was visibly livid, and rightfully so. So, but again, I forget what pay-per-view it was when it first took place, but yeah, I would say that Sting's time with TNA Wrestling, you know, with going through the change, you know, Impact Wrestling, yada yada yada, but you know, him winning the title there means so many times. I mean, again, all the rivalries and, you know, part of the main event mafia, the feud with Aces and Eights, and, you know, again, Bully Ray, Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle, man, you know, and I'm looking at it right here, of course, you even had a rivalry with Hulk Hogan, man. I mean, I'll never forget, I mean, seeing how when Sting beat Samoa Joe for the TNA World title, man. Ooh, you know, and there's so many, you know, matches. You know, I think the first time that, according to this, the first time Sting clashed with Samoa Joe was a qualification match for the 2007 King of the Mountain match, and Samoa Joe won, so. And then at the fourth Bound for Glory, Sting actually challenged Samoa Joe for the title, and Sting won, so. Although it mentions that Kevin Nash got involved, so. Man, and I'm telling you, the matches with Kurt Angle, you know, I always say, like, because right now, the fact that we never saw Sting versus The Undertaker, and Sting actually talked about this, he wanted this to happen when he was in WWE. But he wanted to have a cinematic match with The Undertaker, but unfortunately it didn't happen. But, you know, as I said, you know, the same thing about which Sting rivalry was the best, you know, even though we never saw Sting versus The Undertaker, I'm actually just glad that we saw matches like Sting versus Samoa Joe versus Kurt Angle, you know, and all that. I'm glad that we saw so many other great matches as well. There's one particular one that we never saw, but you know what? There's so many of them that we wanted to see that we got. So there's one that we didn't get, but there's so many that we did get. So I'm more grateful for the fact that we saw a whole lot more than we wanted than when we didn't want. I kind of botched that. I'm grateful to see that we saw more that we wanted, and then only that one time when we didn't get what we wanted, so. So I think it basically, we saw a lot of other great matches. But again, the Sting and Undertaker match is a missed opportunity, unfortunately. But you know what? Again, it's at least Sting was able to have great matches with other so many great pro wrestlers like AJ Styles, like Kurt Angle, Samoa Joe, Bully Ray, Christian Cage, you know, and the list goes on. So, man. So, you know, so during that time, you know, again, you know, I was never really, like, a fan of TNA Wrestling, Impact Wrestling, you know, all the name changes that went, but I'm fully aware of all the great matches as well, so, man. You know, I think even had a feud with Eric Bischoff as well. I think there was a time he lost a championship match. I forget which title it was at the time, but, you know, when it was actually at a Slammiversary match in June of 2011. Yeah, actually, yeah. When Sting actually lost the TNA World Heavyweight Championship to Mr. Anderson, formerly known as Mr. Kennedy in WWE, yeah, Eric Bischoff got involved. So yeah, again, so many memorable moments in TNA wrestling for Sting, and then of course there was a departure, and of course, you know, two years before the departure, he was inducted into the TNA Wrestling Hall of Fame. So, you know, Sting is actually in three Hall of Fames. He's in the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, which is in Wichita Falls, the TNA Wrestling Hall of Fame, and the WWE Hall of Fame. So when Sting finally arrived in 2014, now I think he signed in early 2014, but he didn't make his debut until Survivor Series, although he did make a couple of appearances, you know, for the company, I think, you know, most notably at the San Diego Comic-Con in 2014. So, and of course, they started selling his Sting WWE action figure, and they were selling some merch. So, you know, he was actually even at the roster reveal for WWE 2K15 video game in August of 2014, which was in LA. So he made his debut, you know, at Survivor Series, you know, Team Cena versus Team Authority, which, in my opinion, one of the best Survivor Series matches of all time, you know, cost the Authority the win, and then started, you know, engaging that rivalry with Triple H, it culminated into that match at WrestleMania 31, and, you know, DX interfered, the NWO got involved, and, man, yeah, And just the fact that we saw DX versus the NWO. Probably would have loved to see that maybe 10, 15 years prior, but you know what? At least we finally got to see it, right? So again, it's still, you know, still unfortunate that Sting didn't win the match, but you know, a lot of fans will never, they'll never be happy with the fact that he didn't win. But even though Sting said that, you know, he has no problem with it, you know, it's just interesting that at the end of the match, you know, Sting and Triple H shook hands. So, well, even though Triple H was still a massive heel, and later on that night he came back out and kind of briefly gloated about beating Sting. So, man. So then, you know, shortly after, he did just, you know, I think, you know, after WrestleMania, he appeared on that Raw and then, you know, kind of addressed the match with Triple H, and then he disappeared for a time, and then briefly came back and then assisted Randy Orton in attacking the Authority, and then eventually challenged Seth Rollins to that match. So, although he did actually, well, I think there was actually a time where, I think in August of 2015, when he challenged Seth Rollins, Sting actually originally had a match, I think, you know, with Big Show, and because Sting won by disqualification because Rollins attacked him, I think later on that night, Sting actually teamed up with John Cena to beat Big Show and Seth Rollins. So, but at the Night of Champions, obviously, as I mentioned, because of a legitimate neck injury, I mean, what happened, you know, and Sting ended up losing. You know, it was really unfortunate. I mean, you know, even, there's even stories about how Seth got extremely scared. I mean, and Sting even confirmed, you know, he doesn't blame Seth Rollins for it. He just described it as a freak accident, and in pro wrestling it happens. So, yeah, I refuse to accept the fact that Seth Rollins was reckless and whatnot. No, you know, I think even Sting, I think at one point even praised Rollins and basically said that Seth Rollins was probably the most talented wrestler that he ever worked with. So, so after that, unfortunately, yeah, I think it was eventually diagnosed as cervical spinal stenosis. So, and again, as I mentioned, in April of 2016, while he was being inducted into the Hall of Fame, he announced his retirement. And, you know, and from during that time, you know, we didn't see Sting very much. I mean, in February of 2019, he did actually appear on Monday Night Raw, when they were doing that segment for Ric Flair's 70th birthday, but Ric Flair was attacked by Batista, which set up the match between Triple H and Batista at WrestleMania. So, but that was the last time we saw Sting on WWE programming, and then he basically, you know, left the company. It was officially no longer the company in May of 2020. So, you know, and by October, you know, WWE wasn't even selling his merch anymore. So, Speaking of selling his merch, I hope AEW continues to sell his merch, or I hope it's available somewhere, because I got to get some of Sting's merch. I really do. So now we get to AEW. You know, I got to tell you, the program with Darby Allin and Sting, absolutely incredible. You know, it was great, because, you know, I think the best part is that Sting was able to work matches, you know, and from what I understand, Sting only wanted to do cinematic stuff, but Darby Allin actually convinced him to actually step back in the ring. So, and Sting, you know, in fact, it's 29-0 in AEW. 29-0. And, of course, retired as a champion. You know, his final match, he and Darby Allin retained the AEW Tag Team Championship. Oh, man. Like I said, the program of Sting and Darby Allin, I loved it. I absolutely did. And all the matches that, and the feuds that Sting had in AEW, I mean, Sting still taking the bumps, still working great. Man, I'll never forget also in September of 2022 when Sting actually worked a match for Pro Wrestling NOAH. This was actually an event called the Great Muta Final Bye-Bye. It was actually in January of 2023, I believe, that, you know, where Sting actually teamed up with Allin and Muta in Muta's final match. So, and of course, you know, the time when at Forbidden Door, June of last year, Sting and Allin and Tetsuya Naito defeated Jericho, Guevara, and Minoru Suzuki. And of course, that feud with the Mogul Embassy, man. Oh boy. So that's it, man. So now we get the retirement match. I mean, when he announced his when he announced that he'd be retiring, and he made that announcement in October of last year, you know, and Ric Flair, you know, joins the promotion, you know, from like that, and Ric Flair announces that he'll be in Sting's corner for the final match. I mean, you know, it has to go like that. I mean, his longtime and biggest rival is at his side, you know, when he retires, so, you know, like that. And I gotta be honest with you, I suspected that in the final in his final match, I expected Ric Flair to actually betray Sting and cost Sting and Allen the tag team titles, but it didn't happen. Now, Ric Flair didn't get involved in the match. You know, he was checking in on Sting, and then the Young Bucks delivered that double kick to Ric Flair. So Ric Flair is still willing to take those bumps. But of course, you know, the final match, a tornado tag match. I mean, I'm telling you, what Darby Allin did. I mean, Darby Allin jumping off that ladder into, ugh. I mean, I think you guys know what spot I'm talking about, but my goodness. I mean, Darby Allin is just such a fearless son of a gun. I mean, we all know the story about Darby Allin, about what he experienced when he was 5 years old. I mean, the face paint and everything. Guys, that's, and as he told the story, that's how he really feels, like he was half dead inside. Darby Allin is just a fearless, and I mean a fearless hardcore freak. Oh, man. You know, and that spot has been heavily criticized, really. You know, I think, you know, Tony Khan has been actually getting, you know, has been getting ripped a new one because of it. Because, you know, I would honestly say, I mean, even if some would say, even if Darby Allin requested that spot, Tony Khan still should have said no. But as you know, Tony Khan likes to basically, you know, provide more freedom to his talent. So, no. Again, Darby Allin doesn't fear anything. I mean, I'll never forget Darby Allin, you know, skateboarding down the ramp and then doing a flying clothesline on Chris Jericho. I mean, the coffin drop. I mean, Darby Allin is a hardcore daredevil. A hardcore daredevil. No, I've always said that Darby Allin is also a come-to-life Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, like playable character, aside from the real skateboarders. I mean, I always say, you know what, no. I used to say, like, imagine if Darby Allin had been in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. That was one thought. But you know what? Now I have a better one. Imagine if they came up with a game, Darby Allin's Pro Skateboarder. Imagine Darby Allin has his own brand of skateboarding video games. And imagine Sting is one of the playable characters. Now, that'd be awesome, wouldn't it? But yeah, I gotta tell you, but I think they gotta come up with a better name than skateboarding. I would imagine Darby Allin's Daredevil Skateboarding. I mean, seriously, imagine if Darby Allin had his own brand of skateboarding video games like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. You know, in that match too, I mean, several people that we're familiar with as far as Sting goes, you know, were there. Lex Luger was there, Nikita Koloff, Magnum TA, and of course Diamond Dallas Page. They were there to see Sting's final match. It had to end this way. And who was the special guest, timekeeper, I believe it was? None other than Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. You had legends there. Oh, boy. Man. Man. You know, and the way that match was, see, I spoke to my friend Ricky about it. And Ricky honestly says that he believes that Sting should have lost the match because of the decision as far as the tag team titles go. Well, look, I respect Ricky's opinion on that. Now, I don't agree with it, but I respect it. Well, because, you know, it's his final night, and, you know, and Sting's a legend. So, but then again, Sting never has a problem putting other wrestlers over. I'm a little bit conflicted about how this thing was planned. Part of me believes that Sting wanted to lose the match, but the Young Bucks were like, no, you're the legend, you're going out in style, brother. Because again, the Young Bucks too, they do business as well. I mean, the Young Bucks and the whole rivalry between the Young Bucks and FTR, now that's something right there, there's business. But, because again, Sting is not one to conduct backstage politics. I just don't see that. So, because part of me believes that Sting and Darby Allin had no problem losing to the Young Bucks, because Sting would still be over and he would still go off with a good farewell. But I honestly believe that the Young Bucks felt that it was not necessary for them to win. Look, whatever the case, look, we had a great match, and I'm very grateful for what all four competitors, and I'm grateful to everybody that was involved in the match, who booked it, you know, obviously Tony Khan booked it, like, who came up with the ideas. I mean, I'm grateful because in Sting's final match, it was a hell of a match. And the whole pay-per-view was a hell of a show, even though there was some bad matches. I mean, I would say, excuse me, I would say the good matches, obviously, Will Ospreay's match. Now that's got to be match of the year. Now I'm going off topic, but I briefly got to address this. But Will Ospreay versus Konosuke Takeshita, that's match of the year. And Eddie Kingston versus Bryan Danielson, my God. And at the end, how Bryan Danielson at first teased refusing to shake the hand of Eddie Kingston, but then he finally did. And then after the post-match segment with those two, you know, in the trainer's room, man, Eddie Kingston and Daniel Bryan, dude, that's incredible, man. That's incredible. I mean, Eddie Kingston's just... you see, everybody knows the story. Eddie Kingston's my hero. And Sting hold three titles, man, hard work pays off, y'all. Hard work pays off, so... Oh, boy. Man, the Continental Crown Championship match. You see, and Bryan Danielson put Eddie Kingston over. And Bryan Danielson would say, well, because Eddie deserves it. So, man. You know, FTR versus Moxie and Castagnoli. You know, that was another A-plus match, so... Yeah, but I gotta tell you, Ospreay and Takeshita getting an A+. Man, well, I would say FTR versus Moxley and Castagnoli, that just got an A. So, as far as I'm concerned, the only A+ match was I would say, you know, the final match was A+, but obviously Ospreay and Takeshita, man, that's match of the year right there. Like I said before, Will Ospreay is the greatest pro wrestler in the world today. So again, as I mentioned for this match, I mean, the entrance that Sting made, you know, with his two sons, you know, representing the two different characters, you know, from the time, the Wolfpack Sting and the original Surfer Sting. So, man, that bump off the ladder through that pane of glass, dude, you should have seen Darby Allin's back after this. And you know what, Darby Allin, he would do it again. And you know, honestly, Darby Allin would probably be willing to do something a hell of a lot worse if there's anything worse that he could possibly do. Darby Allin does not know what fear is because he never shows fear. You can't even put the word fear in the same sentence as Darby Allin. So, man. Oh, man. You know... Again, you know, hats off to everybody in this match, and hats off, you know, to AEW for producing one hell of a show. And, you know, as critical as a lot of people are of AEW, you know, at least, you know, people, and those critics are saying, you know what, we can say whatever we want about Tony Khan, we can say he's a wrestling fan with a lot of money, at least Tony Khan properly booked Sting, which was more than we could say for WWE, because wrestling fans are mad about how WWE treated the guy. Now, I'm sure Sting would say, look, let's move on, look, you know, I think Sting would be the first one to say, look, it's in the past, we gotta move on, y'all. So, you know, so again, you know, no matter how bad things were for Sting in WWE, I'm just so blessed that things were great for him in AEW. I mean, I'm telling you, seeing Sting put on great matches like he always has, taking the bumps, you know, displaying the charisma and everything that he's always had since day one. I mean, we saw Sting in an era, in a different era and generation of wrestling. And we saw a great Sting. We saw a unique Sting in the 90s. We saw a unique Sting in the 2000s and in the 2010s. And now we're seeing a unique Sting in the 2020s. 40 years, we saw one unique Sting after another. And that match got an A, and rightfully so. I would give that match also a A+ as well. Man. Everything the Young Bucks did, I mean, Sting just basically kicked out of everything. So, man, you can tell the Young Bucks, Sting and Darby Allin, everybody that was in the match, Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat, you can tell that everybody was having a good time, and so was the fans. Whether you were watching in person, whether you were watching on whatever, Everybody had a great time. And that makes me very, very happy. So before I close it out, well, Tony Khan did announce that the AEW Tag Team Championship is officially vacated, which means there will be a tournament. Right now, I'm predicting that the finals of this tournament has to be the Young Bucks versus FTR because it's time for another clash between the rivalry between the Young Bucks and FTR. So I would imagine that the finals will be the Young Bucks and FTR, and it wouldn't be surprising if the Young Bucks actually came on top of that one. So I gotta tell you, the legacy of Sting, not only will it never be outshined, but quite frankly, it cannot be outshined. There will never be another Sting in pro wrestling. I mean, he was the inaugural inductee into the TNA Hall of Fame. Man. And of course, I think former TNA president Dixie Carter, she actually gives credit to Sting because he was basically, she basically believes that he's the one that TNA needed to basically be put on the map. Now, Sting's one of the guys, basically. Now, again, you can't discredit Kurt Angle. You can't discredit Samoa Joe. You can't discredit AJ Styles and so many other of the other guys that put TNA in a position where it established itself. Sting is one of them, but Sting's not the only one. But still, I understand. So, you know, even Ric Flair, you know, says that Sting is his greatest opponent of all time. And, you know, again, nobody, there's nothing negative to say about Sting. There really isn't. Despite there's been some unfortunate moments. I'm not going to say bad moments. I'm going to say some unfortunate moments like his 2001 heel turn, the infamous match with Jeff Hardy in 2011, and then, of course, his unfortunate loss to Triple H and, you know, like that. There's been some unfortunate moments, but I wouldn't say a bad moment. Although some would say his loss to Triple H was a bad moment, but I want to keep it positive as possible. I really don't want to put any negatives, although unfortunately I just made that mistake. I apologize. But again, I'm going to stick to just unfortunate moments. So man, you look at that that list of accomplishments. My goodness. A three-time comeback of the year in 2006, 2011, and 2014. Match of the year in 1991 with Lex Luger against the Steiner brothers at the first Super Brawl. The most improved wrestler of the year in 1988. And this is by Pro Wrestling Illustrated. The most inspirational wrestler of the year, 1990. Most popular wrestler of the year, four times, 1991, 1992, 1994, 1997. Wrestler of the year, 1990. Man. Again, Hall of Famer in three companies. Well, two companies technically, but also the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, Class of 2018. Of course, it's located in Wichita Falls, and I really need to go visit that museum. Oh, boy. So, man. So as I close it out, I can honestly say that I took this challenge, and I'm sure I might have taken too long, but I'm sorry, but there was just spots that I just had to. I had to go, you know, point by point. I had to. So as I close it out, I actually want to tell a funny story. You know, I've told many times that one time for Halloween, I wanted to be Kane. When I was 7 years old, I wanted to be the masked Kane for Halloween. My parents said no. And then one time, I wanted to be Sting for Halloween, and my parents said no. Yeah, it's pretty embarrassing. Part of me says because, you know, some people ask, is it because your parents didn't want to do the face paint? I'm like, no. Because they felt that Sting was, the Sting character was not suitable for a kid. They felt that Sting was some kind of monster. I'm like, well, he's a scary guy, but he's scary to the bad guys. He's actually, I mean, even during that time, you know, because I had a friend and his older brother and their dad and grandpa, they were all wrestling fans. All of them. I mean, their grandpa told wrestling stories from way back in the freaking, you know, 70s and 60s. I mean, the grandpa remembers when Ric Flair, Harley Race, when those guys were getting started. So they even tried explaining to my parents about the whole Sting character, but my parents just wouldn't budge. So it's embarrassing because I've always been a fan of Sting because I would go to their house and watch Raw's War and sometimes WCW. I mean, that particular friend and his brother would always invite me over for wrestling, watch stuff like that because they really wanted me to become a big wrestling fan that I already was. So, you know, so unfortunately, lost contact with that family, and hopefully one day I'll be able to be in contact with them again. But Sting has been one of my, even though I was never a WCW guy, never an Impact Wrestling guy, Sting has been one of my favorite wrestlers for God knows how long. It's just that as an adult, you know, with the network, you know, watching all the WCW footage and YouTube watching a lot of Impact Wrestling stuff, that solidified the fact that I did my homework on Sting and I was finally able to watch his best matches ever. Thank you, Sting. Thank you for everything. I am forever grateful. And from the bottom of my heart, I say this with such conviction. Pro wrestling's most unique and most illustrious career, 40 years in the business. Such a unique and illustrious career will never be outshined. It cannot be outshined. Sting, thank you. Thank you, legend. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, Ringside Chaos is available anywhere you get your podcasts. So please, hit that subscribe button. Hit that notification bell. That way, I know for sure that you won't be missing out on any exciting upcoming content. Have a good one. God bless. And Sting, once again, thank you. Thank you, legend. Thank you very, very much. God bless.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.